Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com. Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. I'm Julie Douglas.
And my name is Ben Bolin. I host Car Stuff, Stuff They Want You to Know. And today I am guest hosting with you, Julie.
That's right. Today Robert is not here, but in his stead is Mr. Ben Bolin. And Robert will be back for April 5th and Infinity beyond that. But so thank you very much for hanging out with us today.
Oh, thank you. I'm actually a big-time fan, long-time listener, first-time co-host.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's very nice to have you here because today's topic we think is going to be, lend itself nicely to April Fool's Day and a bit of what you do with stuff they don't want you to know, because you deal with conspiracy theories all the time, right?
Yes, yes, it is. In a lot of ways, I would say it's the focus of Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. We also cover some paranormal things, but if we're talking about conspiracy theories, let's go ahead and take it all the way to the top. Let's take it to the moon.
To the moon.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You're speaking of the conspiracy theory that the moon landing was just a hoax perpetrated by the United States government.
Yes. And this is, that's great. You've encapsulated it in a sentence. This, if conspiracy theories were like a band and they had a discography, this would be on the greatest hits, because this is one of the classic conspiracies, and it ranges the reasons that people believe the moon landing was faked can change depending on the circumstances and the conversation.
Right.
But you know, we've got an excellent article from our own John Fuller, right?
That's right. And our wonderful editor John, and it's a great article.
Mm-hmm. And it's about why some people believe the moon landings were a hoax. And, you know, there are some reasons that you'll typically hear.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're really, really typical things are that if you look at the photographs, there are no stars in the background, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, if there are no stars, obviously this was done on a set.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. And NASA's like, you know what? That's not actually why. It's because the sun's rays are hitting the surface and it's way too bright for any camera to capture something in the distance.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, there are these reasons that seem kind of logical that, you can see in conspiracy theory, you know, starting to weave them their way in.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can refute it just as easily with, well, science and facts.
Sure. And an empirical objective observation. There's also, you know, it's funny. This is a sidebar. This conspiracy theory, one of the furthest reaches of it, is the idea that Stanley Kubrick, no one other than Stanley Kubrick himself, actually participated and was the one who filmed the fake landing on the moon.
Of course.
I know. It all makes sense now. The pieces come together.
Oh, my God. That totally makes sense because he's got skin in the game with 2001.
And
Yeah. It's all making sense to me.
And it sounds sort of reasonable. Of course, these explanations people would have. If they don't seem to quite jibe with what you already know, then there must be a reason for that. And the reason, of course, can't be that we were wrong.
Oh, no.
Right.
No. What's another really good one from that?
Okay. Let's go with, the infamous Sea Rock. People who believe the moon landing was faked will tell you that it was a prop that accidentally was shown on film with the letter C on it.
Like foolish prop person forgot to turn the rock around because, you know, whatever, like maybe the company's logo was emblazoned on it and the C was showing.
Right. And never mind that NASA says this is most likely a stray hair that got onto the film in the developing process because, of course, that's just smoke and mirrors.
Right. That's just, of course, yeah, NASA would say that. That seems really logical.
Mm-hmm. That's not the only one, of course. I'm sure we have a list of these here somewhere. Shadow lengths.
Oh, yeah, the different shadow lengths. They were saying, okay, here's a photo of two astronauts are standing together, and yet their photo is showing these lengths that are disproportionate. Mm-hmm. And why is that? Yeah. And so NASA says, okay, again, it's not some sort of faulty lighting system that we used on our set that you think we built. It's actually that the terrain is rough and it's hilly and it produces variances, just like if you were to take a picture on a snow-covered hill.
Right. And that, you know, of course, that makes sense, again, if you have taken photographs on a snow-covered hill. But, of course, if you believe that this is all some sort of large attempt to cover up, quote-unquote, the truth, then, of course, NASA is going to come up with explanations that may even seem clever.
Right.
But they don't jibe again with what you're thinking. Another example, the American flag flapping in the breeze. As we know, one of the reasons that there's not a resort on the moon yet is that the atmosphere is not conducive to human beings or wind. And so the idea is how could the wind show a flag or how could the film show a flag flapping in the breeze?
Right.
And that's one of the other points. I mean, we could go on about this. We go on about this forever. And, Robert, I apologize if people write mean things about moon landings to you. Please, please guys, forward the email to me. You have other accusations, slow motion films and wires. And for a long time, these groups, the people who believed in that the moon landing was fake for some reason and the people who believed that those people were crazy, were understandably contentious. And,
right.
And,
I'm right. You're wrong.
Right. Yes. And, it was difficult for them to have a dialogue about that until Julian Assange of WikiLeaks released some very interesting cables regarding the moon landing.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It turns out it's conclusively proven from these diplomatic cables that the moon landing was faked with the assistance of Stanley Kubrick. This just hit the news. Go ahead and Google it.
You're kidding.
Oh, yeah. Well, to make sure you get right to the story, go ahead and Google Happy April Fool's Day.
Ben Bolin.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's
but you see how easy that was?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what? WikiLeaks? Wait, this is a new source.
Because it sounds reasonable.
Right.
If something like that was going to come from somewhere.
Right. Or new source in the sense that we're starting, obviously, to get a flood of information we haven't gotten before.
Sure. New sensory information.
Right. And my brain was starting to take that in. And I have to say, like, I was like, okay, no, and he's not actually telling the truth over there. But a little part of my brain was going, but WikiLeaks, it's telling us stuff we haven't known before. And I think that's what's so fascinating about just the whole is the moon landings, were they a hoax? But the fact that, you know, we have this sort of logic that can't help but assemble itself on its own. It's almost like its own emergence in our brain cells trying to put all this together for us. And I was thinking about it. You know, we can't help but detect patterns. And especially when we look at past examples that have eroded our faith in information, in government, in the corporations. And a really good example is the cigarette industry.
Oh, that's a great example.
You know, I mean, you know, for years, you know, decades long, footsie playing with the government in terms of the information that they released about cigarettes and how harmful they are.
Sure.
So you've got an example like that, and the public well knows now that that was information that was kept from them. You've got Watergate. You've got Milli Vanilli.
Sure.
You know, I mean, these are things that you can start to point to and say, you know, if it happened before, well, you know, why couldn't it happen again?
This presentation is brought to you by Intel, sponsors of tomorrow.
Because human beings depend, the way that the human species has survived for so long is really based on this ability to detect patterns and to think critically and abstractly about the future, or to let the precedent set from those past experiences influence our attitudes and behaviors when confronted with information that seems similar or seems to, again, coincide with what we had believed before. And this can lead to a funny little thing. And by funny little thing, I mean one an enormously influential theory of psychology.
Yeah.
That we call cognitive dissonance.
Yeah. It's the bread to the butter when it comes to conspiracy theories and how we try to explain to ourselves how this could happen. And I will, you know, I do want to say, like, I'm not making fun of conspiracy theorists and I'm not making light of any of this, but I do think that we all have a little bit of a conspiracy theorist inside of ourselves.
Sure.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be for something like the idea that the world is ruled by Freemasons or reptilian aliens or anything.
It
can be, it can be a small, sort of theory as, I think we talked about a little bit before on the air where you say, you know, ah, that person's after me.
Yeah. Yeah. Or my cat. My cat is purposely, you know, perpetrating this crime against me. I just know it. I just need to get that camera in my house hooked up and then I'll have evidence.
Well, cats are actually vengeful creatures. So I don't know if that's the best
that's
example.
That's a bad example. Yeah. Right. But I mean, basically, when you bring up cognitive dissonance, what we're talking about in more highfalutin terms is that when actions conflict with our beliefs, they can produce a phenomenon called cognitive dissonance. And it's essentially a way of dealing with the discomfort that arises when your brain is trying to parse out two different cognitions, which can then be manifested in our beliefs or our actions.
And here's the if I could take us with a historical sidebar real quick.
Please do.
Okay, so this term cognitive dissonance, we get this from the 1950s by a social psychologist named Leon Festinger. And the interesting thing is his research came about because he was trying to understand why a UFO doomsday cult increased trying to proselytize new believers when their prophecy failed. So this actually does come from a study of conspiracy theory.
Okay. So and so his he kind of sat there and went, hey, now that it's obvious that the UFOs maybe didn't have the evidence that this group thought that there was, why in the world would they continue with their beliefs, right? Like he was like,
yes.
What's going on here?
Excellent question. For the, we'll do the Reader's Digest version of this. So basically there's, this person, this cult leader who begins receiving messages, of course, intangible messages from a UFO, telling her about the end of the world, gathering up followers. She forms a cult. These people are, together, united in their preparation for a coming apocalypse.
Okay.
With a definite date. And the date comes and it goes. And the world, surprisingly, does not end. But the cult leader, strangely enough, gets a new message that says, due to the good works of the cult and the good intentions or whatnot, they have saved the world, which means that their religion is now not disproven, but further validated, which means that they have somehow this kind of attempt to even out or balance the gap between the knowledge that they have, which right. is that the world has not ended, and the actions that they took, you know, and to make themselves, I don't want to say feel better, but to sort of rationalize the distance between those two.
I don't know, though. I think that's the crux of it. I mean, because that is the discomfort they're feeling, right?
Yes, like that's like, the cognitive dissonance.
Okay, they're like, that is not matching up. And and all of a sudden, the cult leader in automatic writing, right, which is like so 1880s.
Nice, yeah.
I love it. You know, gets this message, and then they're all relieved of that discomfort. And that relief outweighs the chance, I suppose, for true knowledge in this case.
Yeah.
And so they're going to be tied to that because at least they're feeling better and it's all squared to their logic and life is normal again, at least for them.
Right.
Whatever normal is.
Mm-hmm. And then with, as Festinger was exploring this, you know, he said that there are, that this dissonance produces a discomfort and correspondingly there will arise pressures to reduce or eliminate this dissonance. And, you know, he goes on to analyze the ways in which, this dissonance occurs.
Yeah.
And how it resolves. And he found that there are, several ways to find this, there are several ways to deal with this cognitive dissonance.
Okay. And. I'll tell you what they are. A person may try to change one or more of their behaviors or beliefs. That's the first way. The second is that a person may try to acquire new information or beliefs to increase the consonance, which will lessen the overall dissonance. I mean, that's obvious in the case of, of the UFO cult.
Sure.
And then the third is that a person may try to forget or play down the importance of the cognition that's butting up against the contradictory cognition.
And there's our smoking example again, right? There's a great example of smoking. And this is from Festinger again. I'm quoting Festinger. He says, for example, a cigarette smoker who believes that smoking is bad for his health has an opinion that is dissonant with the knowledge that he is continuing to smoke. He may have many other opinions, beliefs, or items of knowledge that are consonant with continuing to smoke, but the dissonance still exists too. And because of that discomfort, you know, because humans want patterns. We want all the pieces of a puzzle to fit.
Right.
Because of that, this smoker in this question may try to change a behavior or belief, may try to quit smoking, for instance, may try to learn new things that will increase the consonance, something that says, well, smoking might be bad for other people, but for me, it's actually genius. you know, or may just try to forget it or play it down, you know, never mind, I'm young or I'm under a lot of stress.
Yeah, yeah. And that forgetting part, right? I have to admit that when I was a smoker, I oftentimes, you know, sort of willfully forgot the fact that I was doing all sorts of crazy things to my poor cells and my body. So, I mean, it happens, right? And that's why I say this is so fascinating because there is a little bit of cognitive dissonance going on with us, all of us at some level every day.
Sure.
With the things that we're dealing with. And then you just see it in really extreme forms and stuff like, conspiracy theories, revolving around the moon, for instance.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Or we can also see, at times, cognitive dissonance can really come out in, decision points, you know,
yeah.
For instance, you'll often hear that people will say a public figure or a politician or a large, very influential business owner is saying things that seem to be hypocritical, but how much of that is malevolent or calculated, and how much of that is just these poor folks functioning under cognitive dissonance?
Yeah. So, and basically funneling those perceptions through, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is really interesting. There is a neuroscientist named Cameron Carter at the University of California, Davis. And this is actually information pulled from a Newsweek article titled Wired for Hypocrisy by Sharon Begley. Carter use volunteers to study their brains basically during cognitive dissonance. Mm-hmm. And he did that with fMRI, and the volunteer spent 45 minutes doing a really rote task inside the fMRI tube. And then afterward, they were asked to answer questions about their experience, which of course across the board, they did not like.
Right.
Which seems obvious, right? You're stuck mm-hmm. in a tiny little tube
doing
for 45
something
minutes.
Boring.
Yeah, doing something boring. And you're really going to probably, at least I would highly dislike it. That's what I would check. Highly disliked. Mm-hmm. But they were asked to answer the questions again that they had answered after their first experience. Mm-hmm. And this time, half of the volunteers were told that their answers were going to be read by a nervous patient who needed reassurance about undergoing an fMRI. The other half were told that they were going to get $1 each time they answered the questions as though they were enjoying the scanner.
Ka-ching. So that's the important part, to answer the questions mm-hmm. To sort of present an opinion publicly that does not match with their personal opinion or experience.
Yeah. And of course, I'm just going to ask, like, which scenario do you think was more effective?
That's a question for me that's tricky, because it seems, on the offset, just with this information, it seems like there may be a difference between the people, who amongst us are profiteers and who amongst us are nurturing people.
Okay.
But you know what? For the sake of guessing, I would say that the people who are, motivated by the money probably think that this might be a better thing. No, wait. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I think you just revealed your black capitalist heart.
I did. I'm a profiteer.
You did. You're a profiteer. Actually, it was the people who were most concerned about the nervous patient.
Mm-hmm.
And the exciting thing about this whole thing wasn't necessarily that they could see the neural correlations, mm-hmm. what was going on inside of their brain when they were lying, because they also took an fMRI when they were essentially lying on those tests,
sure.
to see what was going on. All those areas in the brain were active, all those areas that are trying to square two different pieces of information.
Yes.
Yeah, that was definitely happening, and that is interesting in and of itself. But the really interesting thing was that it was the people who were trying to assuage, this phony patient that it was okay. Those were the people who had the most activity, and then those were also the people who afterward continued to say that they had a good experience.
Oh, and that
they changed their brain, essentially. Like they changed their actions and their beliefs based on this.
Julie, there is a fan of Orwell somewhere out there on the internet listening to the show right now, and they're waiting for us to say it. You win. Double think. It's kind of similar to that. And it sort of makes sense, because if you think about it, your cognitive dissonance is sort of your brain asking, why is this happening? Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
And now that I have that answer wrong, it makes sense that the people who are receiving an external reward or an external justification for their lying will find themselves, with less of a desire to internally retrofit their ideas.
Yeah.
So they can say, well, of course I'm lying to these people. I'm getting $1 every time. Let me lie to some more people.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. They don't really have any skin in the game emotionally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a good point. But when you're trying to be involved, and motivate someone, I guess, in a qualified way, when your reward is something that is qualitative rather than quantitative in this case, right?
Yeah.
They're trying to make somebody feel better. And in the process of saying all these, it's not that bad, it's not that boring, you're going to have fun. In the process of that, they're starting to sort of pull the move that Merlin pulls in A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, the Mark Twain book. Merlin makes the mistake of a lot of magicians and believes that his stuff is actual magic.
Yeah.
And so you start to believe yourself as you sell these things.
Well, I will tell you, I'll give you a personal example, and it'll be a short one. But when we were at South by Southwest, I was at the Austin airport and I was coming home, and it was overbooked, of course. Mm-hmm. And I had not had a seat confirmed yet. even though, you know, I'd had my, my arrangements made well in advance. And so what happened is I got bumped from that plane and I was rerouted to St. Paul, Minnesota, and then back down to Atlanta.
St. Paul?
Yeah. Wow. I was mad.
Okay.
I was steaming mad.
Understandably.
I was like a lobster that had crawled out of the pot and I was seeking revenge. And they said, okay, well, and I'm not going to tell you how much they paid me for my inconveniences, but they paid me a considerable sum. And at the time I was like, yeah, whatever. Money doesn't matter. You're awful. Blah. I didn't tell them they're awful.
Cause it's the principle of the thing.
Though. Right. Well, I did actually say it's the principle of the thing and thanks a lot and whatever. And I have to say that ever since then, I applied that money to a mini vacation and the experience feels a lot less awful than it was. Cause it was. It was like, then it was, you know, another 8 hours of travel.
Sure.
And so on and so forth. But I'm going to tell you that that sort of cognitive dissonance was dispelled by the folks at Delta. So I know that they're studying this.
And now you're reaching the state of consonance.
Yeah.
Where things are starting to fit together.
Things are fine.
But
we had a mini vacation.
But here's the question. Oh, and just for the goodies, for the people who love the specifics and the anatomical.
Yeah, yeah. We should talk about the parts of the brain that are lighting up during the fMRI.
So cognitive dissonance engages the dorsal anterior cingulate cortex and anterior insula.
Yes.
These are the parts that light up if you want to look on a map of the brain. Well, not light up. I don't mean like someone's brain is made of LEDs.
Right. But this is the blood is rushing to those parts of the brain.
Sure. The activity increases there, during these cognitive dissonance things. And Julie, I have to ask you, do you think that this experience, in your personal life has given you a confirmation bias?
I don't know that it's given me a confirmation bias, but I can tell you that I've certainly felt or had my own confirmation biases in my own life. And when we talk about confirmation bias, it's really similar to cognitive dissonance. And that, again, we can't help but create patterns out of randomness.
Yes. Like the Supreme Court of the United States, the human species, the human brain places a great value on precedent and on expectations that the past should match the present and the future.
Right. And there is a really interesting book, Leonard Medelanov. Excuse me. Let me try that again because I'm sure that at least his family would appreciate that I pronounced it correctly. But Leonard Mlodinow. Mm. It's called Drunkard's Walk. And it's a book about randomness and it turns chaos theory. And Medelanov is also the co-writer of A Brief History of Time with Stephen Hawking. And for those of you that are interested in this, he's also the victor of a YouTube face-off with Deepak Chopra on quantum entanglement and spirituality.
And I know some people are going to love to check out that one.
It's actually pretty great. I definitely recommend it. But he talks about the confirmation bias, and he says that when we are in the grasp of an illusion, or for that matter, whenever we have a new idea, instead of searching for ways to prove our ideas wrong, we usually attempt to prove them correct. Psychologists call this confirmation bias, and it presents a major impediment to our ability to break free of the misinterpretation of randomness.
Mm-hmm. And it goes on with, to make matters worse, not only do we preferentially seek evidence to confirm our preconceived notions, but we also interpret ambiguous evidence in favor of our ideas. This can be a big problem because data are often ambiguous. So by ignoring some patterns and emphasizing others, our clever brains can reinforce their belief even in the absence of convincing data.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I think is interesting about confirmation bias. It is like cognitive dissonance, but this is more behavioral, I suppose.
Sure.
And again, stems from our experiences and pointing back to what our expectations are. And I thought that was so fascinating about the not looking at the ways that we're wrong. Because we always assume that we're right.
And a lot of people, myself included at times, you know, it's nobody's favorite thing to be wrong.
Who goes around saying like, how am I wrong in the following ways at this very moment? You know,
no, I try to do that when I'm working on something really important right before I put it out, because,
right,
you know, that's just, but that's just sort of a way to proofread or cross check yourself.
Right.
And in the natural world, in informal situations, that doesn't really happen. People want to know if you, for instance, believe that the moon landing is faked. When you're reading things, science proves that you are reading things that will tend to reinforce your beliefs rather than denigrate or erode those beliefs.
Right. You're often going to seek out information that corroborates what you're thinking, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I wanted to give you an example, actually, of confirmation bias.
Excellent.
That I think that we have here perpetuated by me. And this is from a listener email. It's from Russ Smith. And he says, "Hey guys, Russ in Alliance, Ohio here. I love the show. I'm a college student and listen to your podcast all the time, walking to and from class. But as a side note, you should always be aware of your surroundings, especially when you're walking by yourself or in the dark." That's true. "Just a small correction though. In one of your recent podcasts, you mentioned the Lorax cutting down needs. The Lorax was speaking for the, excuse me, I flubbed that. I'm sorry. Cutting down trees, not needs, and causing the environmental change. In fact, it was the Onceler who cut down the trees to make the needs. The Lorax was speaking for the trees against the Onceler."
Mm.
"All the best, Russ." Okay. So that was me. And I do this all the time. I always, when I mean to talk about the Onceler, I always talk about the Lorax, because in my mind, it's axe cutting down.
Yes.
Lorax.
Yeah.
And I cannot square it. And it drives me nuts, because honestly, I read this book at least once a week to my 2-year-old, not just my own personal reading. So anyway.
So confirmation bias?
Confirmation bias right there. Well, actually,
not so much.
Confirmation
yeah.
bias. That's cognitive dissonance.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. So yeah, I mean, there, that's an action right there. My brain is trying to square it. So myth, Mufford, move on my part.
Oh, but that's just part of the human condition. So now we have final proof. As some of the conspiracy fans have asked me, we have final proof that at least one of the people who works at House of Works is not a robot or an android.
Yes.
That is a real letter that I received.
Really?
Uh-huh. Oh.
Yeah, but I mean, you're kind of shimmering a little bit. I mean, how do I know that you're not, you know, a hologram, like, beamed in here by the Illuminati?
That's a great question. And that might be a podcast that goes, more on my end. When we have you guest hosts, some people would say that's ridiculous because the technology doesn't exist. But people who already believe that, of course, would say, no, person A, you're being ridiculous because that technology does exist. And it's obviously been suppressed for thousands of years. Insert various building blocks of existing thought or existing school of thought there. People will in almost, you know, it's easy to describe this in terms of conspiracy theories, but this is a common phenomenon in the human brain, both cognitive dissonance and confirmation bias.
I don't know. I just, you're shimmering again. And now I'm starting to think maybe you've just been sent to talk about this and maybe make me think that the moon landing actually was not a hoax. And you were sent here, weren't you?
Well, that is a very interesting question that we cannot answer completely. I am not at liberty to divulge that information.
All right, fine.
Without confirming or denying it, I have some great news, which is that our own science guru, Robert Lamb, will be returning very soon.
That's right. That's right. And we'll be talking about phalanges next week and why we have 5 on each hand.
Which is such a good question.
It is. It actually is really fascinating. So we'll explore that. But before we wrap up today, I just wanted to give a really quick shout out to Rich Miles. It is your birthday.
Happy birthday,
Happy
Rich.
Happy birthday, March 31st. He is in Laramie, Wyoming. And Nicole and his girlfriend, Micah, actually wanted us to give you a shout out. So it's your birthday.
It's your birthday.
We won't do that too much. But really, I hope you have a wonderful birthday. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for listening. And I would love to know, Ben Bolin.
Yes, Julie Douglas.
Can you tell us where people can reach you, how they can find you?
Oh,
in your various forms, holographic forms.
Oh, yes, yes. You can find car stuff, Stuff They Want You to Know, and Stuff of Genius on Facebook, Twitter. We've got blogs. Also, let me pass the shout out baton to our own John Fuller, of course, who's written this excellent article about the moon landings. Now you can find John's article along with several other interesting, fascinating articles on the website howstuffworks.com. You've probably heard about our handy search bar.
That's right. Just pop it in there. And you can also find Stuff to Blow Your Mind at Blow the Mind at Facebook and Twitter. And you can also drop us a note. Let us know what your favorite conspiracy theory is at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.